Hey guys, before we get into the podcast, I just wanted to do a few housekeeping things. First of all, check out my Pinterest store. The link will be in the show notes. It will also be in Linktree, with if you click on the little Pinterest icon, it will be there. I get a small commission every time you click the link on each picture and purchase it. It's from Amazon, but every time you purchase through that link, I get a small commission. So that would be greatly appreciated. Secondly, follow us on all social media. I will include those in the show notes, the links. And thirdly, this podcast is dedicated to Greg's friend, Megan. And my grandfather, whom we're not alive to see, or will not be alive to see us finally achieve our dream and be on Survivor in some capacity, but we are doing this for you guys. So this podcast is dedicated to them.
If people don't know, your dream as mine is to be a contestant on Survivor. My dream is to be a producer on Survivor. So tell us about when you started watching and when this whole Put Greg on Survivor thing came about and
Good
about
question.
yourself. Yeah. Just.
So this is all really like everybody else. I saw season one, but I wasn't even old enough to apply at the time. Time you had to be 21. I was a junior in high school watching it with my high school girlfriend's family, and it was just the second that theme comes, when that music comes on, I lose my ever loving mind. And I was always a fan of the show, but it was probably about 5 or 10 years after that. That's when it really started for me. Long story short, the summer of 2005, I was walking around the middle school track with my best friend Megan, and I asked her, I said, "What's the craziest thing I could do to get on Survivor?"
To the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin. Let's get into the episode.
Welcome to another episode of Wheel With It. Today, I am here with a man that has been what the topic among the Survivor community because of recent events, and I'm just gonna let him tell you about himself. Welcome, Greg Insko. How are
Yep.
you today?
All right, good. Thanks for having me. This is cool. This is really
So,
cool. I'm honored.
if people don't know, your dream as mine is to be a contestant on Survivor. My dream is to be a producer on Survivor. So, tell us about when you started watching and when this whole Put Greg on Survivor thing came about and
Good
about
question.
yourself. Yeah.
So
Just.
this is all really like everybody else. I saw season one, but I wasn't even old enough to apply at the time. Time you had to be 21. I was a junior in high school watching it with my high school girlfriend's family, and it was just the second that theme comes, when that music comes on, I lose my ever loving mind. And so I was always a fan of the show, but it was probably about 5 or 10 years after that. That's when it really started for me. Long story short, the summer of 2005, I was walking around the middle school track with my best friend Megan, and I asked her, I said, "What's the craziest thing I could do to get on Survivor?" And she was like, "Oh, you should just walk across America, drop off your VHS tape." And I'm like, "Yeah, only an idiot would do that." It was just a joke, but
I
unfortunately,
love the VHS tape. Oh my God.
oh, that's it goes. We're going way back. But so she told me, just drop off your application tape. And it was just a joke. But unfortunately, October 28th of 2006, she passed away. She was only 19. She had a brain aneurysm. It was just one of those things in life that's not supposed to happen. And at that moment, it was like, oh my God, I have to do this. I gave up everything in my life. I donated all my clothes to Goodwill. I had 21 houses. I had all my dream cars. I had a military Hummer. I had a lowrider because I was so gangster. I had a Toyota Supra from Fast and Furious. And at the end of the day, I can buy another Hummer. I can buy another house. I can't buy another Megan. I can't buy another Devin. And I stopped living so much for materialistic things, and I started living for memories and experiences. So it took me a few years to work up the courage, but April of 09, I made peace with God, and I said, this is, I have to do this. If nothing else, first and foremost, I should say, to honor Megan. And hopefully I can get to put this survivor dream to a rest and just move on with life. So April of 09, I started walking from Cincinnati, Ohio to Los Angeles, California to drop off my VHS tape. And when I got there, Lynn Spillman had heard that I was walking across the country. She was the main casting director at the time. And she said, I want to meet you. And I had no expectations prior to that. So there was no way I was going to be let down. Unfortunately, once she said she wanted to meet me, then she says, make sure you don't have any camera or news crews with you because we want the footage. So they film me walking in. And I'm like, oh my God, this is happening. I'm really going to be on Survivor. And that was probably my biggest mistake because then I had expectations. And my expectations at that point were, I'm going to be on Survivor. So I was just set up for this huge letdown. Lynn ended up after, God, like a 2-hour phone call at the very end of it. She said, you're too nice, you're not greedy enough, and you don't have what it takes to outwit anyone. Now, in hindsight, and I was so worried about what the news crews and everybody was saying back home that I took it. Normally, I would not let someone walk all over me like that, but I was just being, I am a nice guy, but again, don't get me wrong. I would not normally let someone walk all over me like that. But again, I was just worried about what the news was going to say back home.
Yeah. And you have to remember that reality TV was in its heyday back then. Yeah. And that's the type of people that they were looking for because they wanted to establish like what reality TV was. I don't want to speak for Jesse, but I don't think that you would get that response today, honestly.
Probably not. I'm not getting any response today, but. So anyway, she tells me I'm too nice, I'm not greedy enough, and I don't have what it takes to outwit anyone. And I come back home, I end up filing bankruptcy, I end up foreclosing on all the houses I had left, and I had to literally start over. And when somebody tells you you're not greedy enough, and then you file bankruptcy, it changes your perspective, you know what I mean?
Can I ask you what you did before to be able to afford all that, or could you afford it? Were you just like dying?
No. So I don't come from money. I'm actually living in the house that on the street I grew up on. It's very middle class. They're $100,000 homes. I, in high school, had a really good job. So I made $30,000 to $35,000 a year my sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school working part-time at a place called H.H. Gregg. It was like Best Buy. I just sold car stereos. And I would always give people like distributor pricing. So I always had a line of people waiting for me. So I did really well. I graduated high school with $100,000 of my own money. And I'll never forget, my mom was doing my taxes and I think it was my junior year of high school. And she said, Greggy, you made more money than me and your dad put together. And I was like, what the heck? Because when you're young, you don't really understand how much money is.
Yeah.
And then houses were obviously cheaper, but also they would do these no income, no doc, no verification, no money down loans. So I was able to buy a ton of houses. Before I was 21, I had 21 houses and $1.5 million worth of property, which in today's money it's a lot more. It's probably about $3 or $4. So had I not foreclosed, I'd be pretty rich right now, to be honest with you, but that's okay. Life isn't always about money, right? So Lynn tells me, I'm too nice. I'm not greedy enough. I don't have what it takes to outwit anyone. And those words haunted me for 10 years to the point where they say you're only an idiot if you do the same thing in life, but you expect a different result.
Yeah. My dad tells me that all the time. Every time he's mad at me for doing something I know I'm not supposed to do or not doing something I'm supposed to do. He's the definition of sanity is doing the same thing over and expecting a different result.
However, I never got anything in life without persistence, whether it was running for office or getting in shape, whatever it is. I never got anything in life without persistence. So I thought, you know what? Maybe I am an idiot if I do the same thing and expect a different result, but I'm going to do it again. So 10 years later, again, I gave up everything in my life and I walked to Los Angeles. But this time I was walking to the Survivor 41 live finale. Everybody was cooped up since COVID. This was the first season back on air. What I did not know is that, as it turns out, as luck would have it, there was no live finale. As luck would have it, I was walking to nowhere.
So, you didn't know that there was not going to be a live finale.
No, I had no idea. So, I start walking and I get to, it took me this time, I'm a little older at this point, I'm 10 years older. And I made sure I stopped. I didn't want to sleep outside this time. I was worrying my mom's sick. And I was 40 years old. I don't want to be sleeping out under bridges and stuff like I when I was 30, but or 25, I think. But anyway, I ended up sleeping in hotels every like 20 miles, basically. But on day 82, I was outside. I was in Arizona, outside of Flagstaff, Arizona, and an officer pulled me over and she said, she was a new officer, and she said, you've got two choices. You can either go to jail because it's illegal to walk on the highway, or I'll take you to a Greyhound and you can get the hell out of my jurisdiction. And I'm like, I don't like either of those options. She's like, you can ride a bicycle. I'm like, ma'am, it's day 82. I'm walking across America. Do I look like I have a bicycle on me? And she knew that I was going to continue breaking the law if she didn't take me to the Greyhound or arrest me, because it's just me out there by myself. I didn't have a crew following me or anything like that. And so she ends up taking me to a Greyhound, and I was going to take it just to the border so I could get out of her jurisdiction, because otherwise they're just going to keep calling on me. You know what I mean? Because people see me on the side of the road. They think I'm a stranded motorist. They call 911 and I'm a nuisance. I get it. But she takes me to the Greyhound. I get on the Greyhound. We're about maybe a half hour outside of Flagstaff, and we're on the Greyhound bus. The bus is going around a bend, and right after the turn, the driver faints, and we hear the rumble strip from the bus hitting on the highway. It hits a rumble.
Yeah.
And so we all look up. And then right as we look up, we fly off the road, and the forest is about a 10-foot drop. So we,
oh my God.
Now we fly off the road, and then boom, we all felt the bus hit the forest floor. And I look up again, and as I'm looking up, we hit a tree, and the whole bus goes on its side. And then,
well, what's going through your mind?
I'm going to die. That literally the bus slams us down and we all get thrown against the side. Nobody's wearing seatbelts. We didn't even know there were seatbelts on the bus. Hey. I can still hear that. I'm toward the back where the engine is, and I can hear the engine revving. He passed out with his foot on the gas. So we're like accelerating through the forest, and I've got a video of this. And the very next tree, I look up. Now, keep in mind, we're doing about 100 feet per second. And maybe it was 70 feet per second. It was about seven. I estimated it to be like 7 to 10 seconds of the worst moment of my life. And it's amazing how quick and how much you can think of in that time. Because I see that next tree coming right at us. And so I went like this to brace for, I went like this to brace for impact. And I was like, oh God, when my head hits my wrist, it's going to break my wrist. So then I went like this. And then I was like, oh crap, if you're going to survive a crash, you have to pretend like you're drunk, because for whatever reason, drunk people tend to survive crashes. So I slouched down in my seat like I was drunk. And then I looked up one last time and I saw that tree coming dead straight at us. And I was like, I don't want to watch myself die. So I just closed my eyes and just waited to die. And the bus hit like a boulder, like a rock. And you can see the imprint in the dirt. It did almost a 90-degree turn, which slowed us down a little bit. But we hit one more tree and the branches came through the windshield, and it finally brought the bus to a stop. But when the bus came to a stop, there's all this dust, debris, smoke. I think the bus is on fire. So everybody's yelling, the bus is on fire, get out. And nobody can find the emergency exit. The seat I'm sitting in has this red button and I'm hitting it and nothing's happening. So I'm like, screw it, we got to get off this bus. There was a vent on the ceiling of the bus. And I'm like, oh my God, like, how am I going to get out of that vent? Because the vent wasn't big enough for a human body to fit through it. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to try the front of the bus but the impact was where the door was on the very front of the bus. But I was just skinny enough to squeeze through and I was able to get out, and nobody's phone was working because everybody's yelling, call 911, but nobody's getting service because we're in the middle of a forest. And so I walked like 1,000 feet back to the road to try to get help, and nobody pulled over. I don't know how at least a handful of cars had to have seen us run off the road and nobody could find us. And the forest was that dense. So I get to the road. My phone finally works, picks up a signal. We're calling 911. Out of 18 people, I was one of 9 to walk away. I don't know what happened to the other 9. I hope they all survived. But I do have a lawsuit right now with Greyhound, and we're supposed to go to trial in February. So it'll be almost 2.5 years by that point. But I'm guessing I didn't get a call from any ambulance chasers or anything until about 6 months after the accident. And my guess is maybe somebody had succumbed to their injuries or something like that. But for my 40th birthday this past year, I drove 12,000 miles across the country doing 40 things for my 40th birthday. And I drove past where the bus crash was and there was no white crosses. So I'm praying everybody made it. It was just, oh God, that was awful. That was just an awful thing to live through. And the worst part was, like, I was trying so hard to get, I've done a bunch of TV shows. I've done about 100 movies and reality shows. So I've had my 15 minutes of fame a few times. And I don't need it, I promise, but I do have fun with it and I enjoy it. I was really, oh gosh, where was I going with that? I don't know. You need a little bit of attention to get on Survivor, but I didn't need a lot of it. And I was, the local news crews back home in Cincinnati, they wouldn't do interviews. I couldn't get anyone to do anything. And then finally, after the bus crash happens, all of a sudden, you know, everybody wants to do an interview and it's, oh, really? Now that since I almost died, now you guys want to talk to me. But prior to this,
yeah, now you want to talk to me.
And I never, and still to this day, I've not heard from anybody from Survivor or casting.
They have a lot of stories like that. And
if somebody has a story like mine, I would be shocked. I always tell
people. Not a lot of like incredible stuff. Not like yours, but like.
But I don't know. I always tell people no one has a story like mine and they never will. And I just can't. So at this point, truthfully, I just want closure. You know what I mean? I'm 40 years old. I don't have any kids. I'm not married. I want to start a family. And if you want to be good at something, much less great, you've got to be willing to dedicate everything to it. And unfortunately, Survivor's just held me back. I've had plenty of chances with girls that I've dated throughout the years to start a family and all that stuff. And I always had that feeling of, if you start a family, then you have to let go of everything else, because that's fair. You don't want to be, I don't want to be selfish, and I don't, Survivor should never come before your kids or your family, but I haven't been able to give it up.
Family comes first. And honestly, I'm almost ashamed to admit this, but since you admitted that, I will. I'm like, I'm not going to want to be married or have kids until I've given this a shot, because I always have that feeling inside of me. What if I had just done that one more thing?
You know what I always tell people is, normal people, they would say, before I start a family or before I get married or before I have kids, first, I want to go through school, or I want to get a house, or I want to get a job. Those are normal things for people to, before they start a family, right? For me, I always just needed closure to Survivor. That was just my, and I wish that when me and Megan were walking around that track, I wish she would have said anything other than Survivor, because I would have already accomplished it. It's just, for whatever reason, this has just been an unattainable, for me, closure. It's so black and white. It's either you get on the show or the show gets canceled, which is selfish and cynical. So I would love to find some, I feel like, had I gotten to meet Jeff
Or Jeff quit.
No, I would still want to, even if Jeff quit. But I feel like if I would have met Jeff during my last walk, what I planned on saying to him is, telling him what closure looked like for me, and then just saying, I feel like the most I can ask of you is just to put me on the dream team, and hopefully that would be good enough for me. The dream team are the people that do the challenges, but they're not on TV. At least something like that, maybe I could look back and go, you know what, Greg? You gave it your all, but at least you got this. At least you were able to do that. Whereas right now, it's these guys, these casting directors and the people who work in production, they get a paycheck. They get to do what they want to do. You know what I've gotten since I've started this since this journey began? Heartache, foreclosure, bankruptcy, almost died, staph infection. You want me to keep going? I've given everything. I cannot imagine that anyone has given more than me, because they haven't. Brandon Donlan, who I have a mutual friend with, he, in his interview, which is a great answer, he said, no one wants this more than him. I'm sorry, Brandon, but that is not the case. That guy couldn't walk a mile in my shoes, figuratively and literally.
And I have immense respect for Brandon Donovan. Immense.
And don't get me wrong. I am envious of him, but I'm not jealous. There's a difference. And I'm very happy for him. And I hope that this leads to future fans getting on the show. But if I'm allowed to be critical of Brandon, at least for a second, I would say, look, Brandon, you were an alternate on a previous season. You had plenty of time to do the bare minimum of exercise. He's smart enough to know that you don't wear baggy, heavy clothes when you're going to jump into the water that makes you heavier. especially if you're not in the best shape to begin with, because that ladder, and they do give you anxiety medication on the show. And I'm sorry he went through that, and I'm not trying to knock him down for that. That's certainly not fair, but he did pass a psych evaluation. He did pass all the medical testing and physicals to get on the show.
They do give you anxiety meds on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they give you reflux meds?
My guess is they'll give you whatever you need, except in the case of, I don't remember the guy's name, but they
kicked him off.
It was like, is that his name a couple seasons ago? Because yep. He lied about his medical something.
Yeah, he had lithium. And if you don't know anything about lithium, they used to use it back in the day before mental health was really understood for like schizophrenics and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So that's what I've heard. So it has crazy side effects. Like it can make you like crazy if you don't eat enough, like life and death kind of thing.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Or maybe life and limb, if not life and death. So they had to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, wasn't the best showing on his behalf. There's a lot of season left, and I wish him the best for sure. And I hope they give more fans the chance, because for so long they just heavily recruited, and now with the girl quitting, with Hannah quitting, I got blown up on the internet. Oh my God, so many fans try or people try out, and then this girl quits, and it's okay. Hold the phone. It was probably about 12 or 13 years ago, something like, maybe it was 10 years ago, I had typed in one of those survivor groups on Facebook that I bet Lynn Spillman purposely cast that person because they quit on the show knowing they would quit. And sure enough, she liked my comment. That just confirms that they purposely cast people to quit, because you do need that. You do need different personality types. You know what I mean? And
I don't think Jeff would do that nowadays, though.
Nowadays, probably not. Yeah.
He didn't go too harsh on her because he, first of all, she's a woman, he's a man in Hollywood. Don't want me to. And social media did it for him, but you could tell he was pissed.
Yeah, I did read an interview that he said he should not have cast her. He didn't see that coming, which is fair. That stuff's going to, look, out of 660 something contestants over 20 years, that's going to happen. You know what I mean? So was I offended or bothered by her going home? No, not even in the slightest. I don't care who's on the show, ethnicity wise or just anything. What I care about are people that are just entertaining. And I was entertained. You know what I mean? Would I loved her spot on the show? Sure. But it just wasn't my time. So I wasn't as offended as everyone else was, but it was definitely, I did feel a little bit vindicated and humbled that so many people saw that and thought, remember the guy that walked across the country? You think he would have quit? I don't know. You need quitters, truthfully. You do. Not every season, I don't think. But in general, you need all types of personality types. And if I was a casting director and I knew somebody had a nicotine addiction and I knew that they were the quitting type to begin with, maybe I would cast them just to knowing that would happen. I think what the real bummer was the fact that it happened on the very first episode, because the first episode gets everybody hyped up to watch the next episode. We'll see how ratings are. Everybody who was online, I will say this, her quitting, the one thing it did do is it spawned a ton of people that are now applying for the show because they think they can, just because the bar is so low. They're thinking, well, that girl quit. At least I'm better than that. So maybe that was the goal all along. I don't know, but.
And it will have no effect on ratings at all. That's my prediction. Because after every controversy, except for maybe season 39, which was a whole nother debacle, but that we're thankfully beyond now, people have said, I'm never watching it again. And I've checked the ratings the next week because I'm a ratings nut I want to be in production. Yeah. And they're the exact same. If not a little higher.
Do me a favor, because I'm very anxious. I did read. The guy's name was Greg. I don't remember what Facebook group it was in, but he had posted that the ratings for the premiere for this season were higher than the premiere for last season. I would love to know if they traditionally, after the premiere, they go down anyway. How much they go down this season versus last season? That would be interesting.
I don't check them every week. I just check them like when they're readily available, but I will get on to Nielsen and see if they have...
Keep me posted. I'm really curious how that plays out for sure.
Thursday morning, I'll go on Nielsen.com and be like, okay, what were the ratings?
Yes, I would love that. That would be great. Definitely.
So what else do you do besides have a fandom of this crazy shit?
So I've done a ton of previous shows and movies, and I also own a dance studio. I teach Zumba, and I still have one rental property. And then I've also got crypto business. So you can, so it's difficult to explain, but you know how when you do American Express and Visa transactions, they get paid a small fee for doing the transaction?
Yeah.
With crypto, nobody owns that. Visa and American Express, they own themselves, right? Whereas crypto, you can own it, I can own it. So you get these computers, they do these transactions, and you get paid.
Yeah, I always explain, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I always explain to people, my explanation of it is, I haven't explained it to anybody, but my explanation of it is how the federal government prints money.
Yes.
In crypto, you print the money.
Yeah, pretty much. So that I do that too, which is fun. It's technically called mining. That's the term. But yeah, so I do a little bit of everything. I'm very spread out. I used to do a lot on e-commerce, like eBay, Mercari, OfferUp, all that kind of stuff. Not so much anymore. I had some great luck during the pandemic, and then some horrible luck right before I left to walk across the country the second time.
What do you want to do if, let's say, the worst happens and you don't get on Survivor, or after Survivor, because Survivor ends? Is there a plan B or a after?
No. So here's the deal. I don't remember what show it was, but there was a casting director years ago that had cast me for something. And I do remember asking her, like, hey, why did you cast me? And I never have asked somebody that. So I'm surprised I even asked it. But she said, I cast you because you don't have a plan B. You're so confident in plan A that you don't need one. And I was like, wow, I guess I never really saw that in myself. I've been so optimistic and so persistent and so confident in plan A and just getting closure to Survivor that there is no plan B. I wish there was. I wish there was, unless it gets canceled, that's my plan B, because then at that point you have to accept it. There's no getting around it. So it's literally get on Survivor, die, or it get canceled. That's it. And until one of those three things happen, there's no way I'm going to be able to start a family and do the other things in life that I really want to do.
Basically, because honestly, I'm exploring other avenues for income in the meantime, but I'm like, but my mom would say reasonable accommodations are the limits of the ADA. So Jeff would have to go above and beyond the law. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to hope against hope. And if there is one guy that would do that, I feel like it's Jeff. I don't know. But
so here's the thing, when he's been doing this for so long, that I look at Jeff Probst a lot like how I look at Dana White, the UFC president. They've been doing this for so long. What gets you out of bed? What makes you want to get up and do the exact same thing every single day? And I think that those two live for the holy crap moments. Oh my God. So the knockouts in the UFC, the blindsides in Survivor. That's what they live for.
The three advantage get in.
The unicorns, right? And so I think recently Jeff probably was getting stale. He was getting bored. And that's why you see him being more involved in the show and doing things that you didn't normally see him do in the years past. One of the other things I would have done had I got to meet him after that walk is I had some Flint with me. And I said, Jeff, no one's ever done what I've done and they never will. So make an exception to the rule. Let's go live at the finale or after the finale on Instagram or something like that. And if I make fire, I'm on the show. If you beat me, then I'm not. How cool would that be? That's something that would, I feel, is so unique and different. That's the kind of things I could see him doing, just like putting you on the show. Now, obviously, they're going to have to figure out all the quirks and all that stuff, but they haven't announced someone being on the show until the promos since like season, I think I was told, 3 or 4. So why not give me a chance to go on a press tour? Let me go do all the radio stations and get everybody hyped for the show, especially if they do like an influencer or a celebrity versus fan kind of series, because it's very hard for people to hide where they're going to be gone for X amount of time. So I think that those days are coming. They're going to start pre-announcing people being on the show so that they can hype it up more. And look, let's face it, if you're getting stale, you're going to try new things, and or not even stale, if you just are bored or if you just want to try new things, and time will tell. But if Jeff, God forbid, something happens to him or he doesn't want to do it anymore, it's cheap to produce and the ratings are still respectable. What do you think happens? Does the show just quit if Jeff quits, or do they find another host? What's your prediction?
My prediction is that they will try to find another host, but it will not go very well. Because every time people, for lack of a better term, crap on Jeff Probst, I'm like, okay, go find a better one.
Yeah.
Honestly, Jeff has his flaws. He's not a perfect human being. But honestly, he's why I'm pursuing a career in this industry. Why I'm trying to exercise and get as independent as possible. I love to see it for me. And partly it is for me. But yeah. Partly it's for that. So.
That's good. That's good. Everybody needs some sort of an inspiration. Is one of the most powerful things in the entire world. And the fact that he and Survivor has given you that gift, that's such a blessing. It really is. And I
saw Noelle on there and Ryan. I'm like, okay, there's no excuse.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No excuse. You can't make excuses in life. That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And just, you got to be persistent. And I do believe that there's that millisecond in life where if you're at the right place at the right time, it'll work out. And whether or not we live long enough to get that millisecond in time, that's a whole nother story. But yeah, no, I would love to see you on. I don't know how they would do it, but it's super intriguing to even figuring it out.
In a production role, not in a contestant role.
Oh, no, I want to see you as a contestant. I want the whole thing. Production, there are so many jobs in production that they could put you in. It would be unbelievable. There's no excuses for that. Contestant wise, they would have to figure out some logistical things. However, let's do it. You know what I mean? Why not? You know what I mean? We've done just about everything else, right?
If I can be a representative for the wheelchair community on freaking Survivor, go ahead. Like, yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
I can't swim, so I'd have to look at the swim.
Yeah.
And get a lot stronger, but it might take a few years, but hey, let's.
If there's a will, there's a way. And I don't know what that would look like, but there's always, never lose hope. You know what I mean? There's always potential for something. You just never know. Crazier things have happened. So.
Yes. But for the record, if given the option between production and contestant, I would prefer production because that's my chosen field.
Well, for the record, I want to see you as a contestant because
okay.
Production, I would never get to see you. You know what I mean? I just get to know what you do. Yeah.
Well, what other dream do you have besides?
That's funny you said that. Okay, this is going to be a long story. So for my 30th birthday, I did a Zumba benefit class and all the proceeds went to my friend Megan's scholarship fund. And I remember someone had anonymously PayPal'd me like $500 and there was a note attached to it. So I'll have to paraphrase something to the effect of, "Greg, we wanted to do something nice for you without drawing attention to myself. Please use this money to go out to Los Angeles. We think you're the next Richard Simmons. Go meet him." And I'm like, okay, that's odd, but okay, cool. I remember I messaged my friend's mom and I said, "Do you want me to just donate this money to the scholarship fund?" And she said, "No, go out there and meet Richard Simmons. $500 is a lot of money, but it's not quite enough to hotel, rental car, that kind of thing." So I timed it with Brandon Hance had invited me out to his finale when he was on. And so I tried to time it with that the second time he was on. And I went out and I flew out there. I went out there. And so it was me, my godson's godmom, casting director for that show Catfish, and Richard Simmons. It was us four. And Richard walks in through the door and he's got these blue snakeskin tights on and he's wearing this pink Swarovski crystal bedazzled Survivor looking halter top thing. He's a
Brandon?
No, this is Richard Simmons.
Okay.
And he's holding a balloon. He's got his hair, he's got glitter everywhere and he's eating a sucker. He points at me and he goes, "Greg, where is your boyfriend?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm actually straight." And he's like, "I don't believe you." And I was like, "Okay."
God.
But then he walks up to me and he goes, "This is Mother's Day weekend." And he's, "Greg, what's your favorite Mother's Day memory?" And I was like, "Oh, Richard, you're killing me." I was like, "Tomorrow Sunday is Mother's Day. I'm going to wish my mom a happy Mother's Day for the first time in 10 years. She had moved to Oklahoma and remarried, and I took the divorce really hard. So I told him tomorrow was going to be my favorite Mother's Day because I was going to wish my mom a happy Mother's Day. And he starts bawling, crying. And I'm like, oh God, he thinks I'm gay and I made him cry. This is the worst first impression I could ever make on somebody. He ends up getting it to gaining his composure, and we're sweating to the oldies. And he gets everybody in a big circle. And then he points at me and he goes, Greg, take off your shirt. And I was like, what? So I take off my shirt and he turns me, spins me the other direction. And his assistant comes up and says, spread your legs. Richard's going to crawl through them. And I'm like, what? So I turn around, I look back, and Richard Simmons is crawling seductively towards me. He gets like halfway to me and he lays on his back and he starts scooting on it like a baby does, like on their back. Next thing I know, he is literally in between my legs. I'm standing over top of him. Unbeknownst to him, do you remember when Hostess went on strike and they quit making Twinkies? I was that guy that had to buy the last box of Twinkies. So I got on eBay and I spent $100 on the last box of Twinkies. Unbeknownst to Richard, I brought one for him and I had it in my pocket. So I pull out a Twinkie, I unwrap it, I hand it to him, and he's oh my God, this is amazing. So I want you to do push-ups off my chest. And I'm like, what? So I dig my hands into his hairy, burly, sweaty chest. And he's eating this Twinkie. So I'm doing push-ups off his chest. I go down. He leans forward. There's Twinkie all over both of our mouths. Like, it looks like I just ate a Twinkie out of his mouth. And he's helped me up. So I help him up. And he gets this close to my face. And he goes, kiss me, mother, and plants one right on me. And I'm like, what just happened here? It's the only man I've ever kissed other than my dad. And so everybody's like dying laughing. And I get my shirt back.
That's hilarious.
I get my shirt back on. He walks behind me and he whispers in my ear. He goes, see me after class. And I'm like, like at this point, like I've had the Richard Simmons experience.
You're like, nope.
There is absolutely no way that I'm going to wait for him after class. So I waited for him after class. And it was me, my godson's godmom, the catfish casting director, and Richard. And he says, Greg, give me your phone. And I was like, huh? I had a BlackBerry at the time, and he takes my phone and he says, I'm calling your mother. And he calls my mom. I don't know if the number is even still the same. I hadn't talked to her in so long. And he calls my mom and he goes, Peggy, this is Richard Simmons. And I could tell my mom is really, Greg, like, you haven't talked to me in all these years and you're going to prank call me pretending to be Richard Simmons.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best you got. 2 minutes into the phone call, I could tell that he could tell, or my mom could tell, this really was Richard Simmons. And out of nowhere, Richard says, Peggy, your son needs your love and he needs to forgive you. So I'm flying him to Oklahoma to come see you. And I start crying. He's crying. He's leaking glitter everywhere. Like on the ground, there's flamingo feathers. It looked like we killed a clown. And sure enough, the very next day, he calls me up and he says, Greg, I want you to go see your mom. And I said, Richard, this is the nicest thing anyone's ever done for me. But rather than me going to Oklahoma, I would rather try to fly my mom to Ohio because she's getting ready to be a grandma for the first time. And my middle brother didn't have a relationship with her either. And so he starts crying. He's like, this is destiny. And sure enough, he flew my mom to Ohio and the baby was late being born. So she didn't get to see the baby being born. Richard called me and he goes, I want to see a picture of that baby. And I was like, Richard, I said, the baby was late being born. I said, but thank you so much. We all forgave each other. Thank you so much. And he's, I want to see a picture of that baby. So my mom ended up coming back out. I think it was the following weekend. And so I sent him a picture of her and the baby and he was so happy. And then the following week, it was really soon afterwards, my mom, unfortunately, she was on the back of my stepdad's motorcycle and they were like T-boned somehow and like broken collarbone, punctured lung. My mom's foot was amputated. Both my mom and stepdad did survive, but I called Richard and I remember just saying, thank you so much. If it wasn't for your insane like act of kindness, I might not have been able to say goodbye to my mom. So I'm forever grateful for Richard helping bring my mom back into my life. And everything's great now, thank God. And they're both, my stepdad and my mom are both great. But it just blows my mind, like the series of events it took, literally walking across America. I got injured. The YMCA gave me a scholarship. I started teaching Zumba. I did a benefit for Megan through Zumba. Someone anonymously PayPal'd me money. I used that money to go see Richard. Like the series of events that led up to that are always going to be the story of my life. But so I became friends with Richard. The next time I went out to see him, and I still to this day regret this, I asked him, this comes back to your original question of, don't you have any other goals? And I said to Richard, I knew he would help me with anything. He was just such a good guy. He just helped me bring my mom back. And I asked him, I said, Richard, can you help me get on Survivor? And I was positive, absolutely positive that he would say, of course, who do I need to call? One of those kind of things. And to my absolute shock, he was like, no. He's like, don't you have any other dreams? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, what are they? I said, I've been the mascot for a company called Shark Fights. It's like the UFC, but a much smaller organization. I said, I thought it would be fun to be the mascot for the UFC. And he was like, well, why don't you do it? And I was like, the costume is like $5,000 and I'm not rich at this point. And he was like, just do it. And I, at that moment, I was like, okay, I feel like if no matter what, like someone's got my back in this. And I thought, you know what? I'll take that leap of faith. So I ended up buying it was $5,000 to make this UFC fighter named Chuck Liddell, a costume of him, a giant mascot. And so literally I just showed up at the UFC one day. And then next thing you know, I did 20 shows for them before the company was sold and before I got elected in my whole hometown. So I couldn't do it anymore. But yeah, that was one of my other dreams. I wouldn't mind getting back into that. But truthfully, like, I just like to entertain. Ever since that first walk, I developed a passion to entertain. And after the bus crash, I lost that passion. And the only thing that was able to really bring it back was my weekly vlogs. My weekly vlogs after the bus crash forced me to get out and just live. And just the PTSD was hell for sure, but it forced me to get over it. I've been doing weekly vlogs on my Facebook and then also on my youtube.com/putgregonsurvivor for the last about 2 years now. But like I was telling you earlier, I'm spending $20,000 a year making these vlogs, which is bare bones compared to most people. And I was getting good views on Facebook, but there was no path to monetization. So I switched over to YouTube and I'm getting hardly any views, but at least there's a path to monetization. So I'm very close. I think this month, I'll finally be able to get monetized. So that way I can go live and I can get monetized and I can get AdSense revenue. And I don't think I'll make 20,000 right away, but it's at least enough for this to be sustainable. Because if you've got a $20,000 a year vanity project, at some point you have to make it profitable. You know what I mean? Otherwise it's not sustainable. So things are going in the right direction for sure.
Yeah. What makes it cost $20,000?
So my YouTube videos, figure this, I do one per week. So that's 52 per year. So that's about $400 per video. Just gas driving where I'm going.
You know,
something. And then what was my last video? Okay, so my last video, I went to the world's largest bounce house, which I got lucky, happened to be in my community. But tickets for it were like, I think $40 each. And I bought two, one for me and my friend, plus tax, plus parking, plus food, all that. So it ends up being about $100 there. And then I did get injured. So then I had to go. And then that was another $100 at the doctor. So it's amazing. Like, you don't think of it, but it just adds up. Not to mention, I'm spending 30 to 40 hours a week editing these videos. $30 to $40 hours, even at minimum wage, is way more than
I'm like, I should get some weeks and I just do a little Zoom interview. That's why I'm like, why does it cost that much? But some weeks I'm like, somebody should be paying me for how hard I'm working on these.
Consistency is everything. And eventually someone will pay you. If nothing else, just ad revenue. Yeah, it just takes time. But there's a clear path on YouTube for anybody that's consistent enough. Consistency is everything, though. I can't stress that enough. I can't believe I've had 500 videos and not one of them go viral. You know what I mean? It's crazy. What really got me to switch over to YouTube from posting on Facebook, because I was doing at least 3,000 views per video on Facebook, which is very respectable, but I wasn't getting paid anything. When I switched over, the main reason I switched over to YouTube is there was a guy named PewDiePie I don't know if you know who that is. Okay, so
we learned about him in my media culture technology class that I had to take for my communications degree. And I'm sorry if you're hearing the chair in the background. Of course, I need to, of course, my body decides, I don't want to be positioned right.
No worries. So PewDiePie, he was at the time the biggest YouTuber on YouTube, bigger than Mr. Beast. Yeah. And he did a reaction video during the pandemic because nobody was making new content of one of my old reality shows I did. And this video ended up getting 6 million views. All he had to do was tag me in the video. And even if 1% or 0.001% of people donated, I would have made enough money to buy a house. So I saw this guy making at least tens of thousands of dollars off of me and my old videos. And I made nothing off of it. And I'm like, okay, I've got enough stuff out there that I should at least have my own channel and try to get some of that revenue back. So
yeah, what reality show was
that? One was a show on TLC called Extreme Cheapskates. I had an episode of that.
Oh my gosh, you were on that.
I was on that. I've done about 100 between reality shows and movies. I've done about 100. And I'm praying that someday that doesn't bite me in the butt, because I could see Survivor being like, you've done all this other crap. We don't want you because of that. That's one of my biggest fears.
Yeah, I think as long as you're not under any non-competes, it should be fine.
No, that was 10 years ago, that particular episode. Recently, I've just done like game shows and stuff like that.
Have you ever thought about applying? You know how Price is Right does like a Survivor night once in a while?
I actually had a friend that was working on The Price is Right. I have never applied for that. I don't know. I guess I should. Oh, no, that you have to go in person, I think. I don't think you apply for that.
I thought about applying to the WAF one, but I found out that applications were open too late, because I'm like, what better way to get in front of Jeff? It's in the U.S. I can send him a link to my production portfolio and meet some of my favorite survivors too. And because no matter what my friends say, I don't watch Survivor just for Jeff. I love the game too. So I'm like, what better way? But by the time I saved the link and I tried to go back to it, for some reason I couldn't find it again. And maybe that was because I should have been able to find it. Anyway, by the time I got back to it, applications had closed, I think. And we're closed.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I look at doing TV shows and movies a lot like dating. Like, you could strike out 99 times, but that one time is all it takes to make something special happen. So I look at it like this: apply for everything. You know, there, especially like the way social media is these days, there's a niche for everything. When I walked to the last Survivor casting call afterwards, we went to Cedar Point. There was a couple there. They're called the Cedar Couple. And literally all they do for a living is they go to Cedar Point and they live stream themselves playing the games. How crazy is that? That's an actual job for someone. I'll tell you this, the most views I've gotten on my YouTube channel since I started was not walking across the country. It was literally from doing player assessments on this season, just literally talking about the players and doing a recap after every episode. Anybody can do that. You know what I mean? So at the bare minimum, do a weekly recap, do live streams. There are so many. Out of 660 former contestants on Survivor, I know that's your niche. If you message them, I bet you at least a couple hundred would be willing to come on and do these YouTube lives with you and just talk about Survivor.
Oh, yeah. I did one with Mike Gaber, and I was like, and I love him. We're friends now. But I was like, okay, I want to have Noel on or Ryan. Because I've been dying to get people with disabilities on Survivor. And I want to. And so I'm like, their press requirements are still in effect. So they can't do it. But I'm like, yeah, because they have press requirements that you can't do anything that's not by CBS until 2 seasons after you is over. So they were on 43.
Wow.
And because I wanted to have them on, and they're like, you have to get it approved. And I don't know how I figured this out, but I calculated that it was 2 seasons. So it's a full cycle. Okay. So maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think it's a full cycle. So if you wanted to have anybody from 43 on, except for gay workers. They exempted them from it because she donated the money.
Oh, interesting. So, I've never heard that before.
If you wanted to have somebody from 43 on, you won't be able to do it till Jeff says goodnight on the finale.
Okay. At least you know when you can start. I'm sure that Noelle and I'm sure all of them would do it with you. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Yes. And Ryan has already expressed interest in doing it. We have to wait until the next requirements are, or we have to get it approved by CBS, because I don't have the numbers right now to get it approved by CBS, because they want like so many views.
Just be steady. Slow and steady wins the race, right? In the meantime, there's still a few hundred other Survivor contestants that I'm sure you could get on your show.
Yeah. And I want to have all these other Survivor. I want to have Chrissy Hoffbeck because she's been through a health battle recently. I really want to have Sui, but that's going to be because she's on Big Brother and I don't know what Big Brother stuff is.
Yeah. I just keep reaching out. Worst case scenario, they say no. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So anything else that you would like to add before we get off here?
No,
it
didn't
feel like a podcast. It felt like a conversation, honestly.
So I always tell people, if you only remember three words I say, remember this: live your dreams. And if you're doing what you want to because you want to, not because you have to, you're living the dream. So that's all I'd leave people with. If you want to follow me, if you don't, follow Devin.
Yes. And put Greg on Survivor, Matt.
Yeah. You tell him.
Yeah.
Or else.
Yes. Or else. But thank you so much for doing this. I hope this works. And then I will be able to say I had a part in getting somebody on Survivor. Yeah. So thank you so much for doing this. I hope we get on Survivor because of this. And we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media and subscribe. Be sure to hit the bell so you'll get notified when we upload new episodes. See you next time.